Welcome to CBS Mornings on the Go. Ahead on this Monday, August 3rd, America's water systems are under cyber attack. Officials say it could be Iran. Well, President Trump says no. So what's going on there? We're going to ask America's former head of cybersecurity. Plus, a new study shows most people are not sleeping well. I know I'm not. We're going to find out why and what to do about it. Also, the Met Gala is set to honor a controversial designer convicted of making racist and anti-Semitic comments. Will the stars still go? Then in studio today, actor, writer, director Paul W. Downs from the hit show Hacks. We're going to talk about the final season. And in Beg Knows America, how a town in Maine came together to help a little girl fight City Hall for a very heartwarming reason. All that and more ahead.
Let's begin though this hour with three massive wildfires causing immense devastation near the city of Spokane, Washington. Thousands of acres have burned, hundreds of homes have been destroyed, tens of thousands have been forced to evacuate, and there is still a state of emergency. Chris Van Cleve is there. Chris, good morning again. What are you seeing on the ground?
Well, good morning. This is what's left after the Fairview fire came through this neighborhood. And when you drive around here, more homes look like this than the ones that are still standing. And that's just one of three fires that are burning around the Spokane, Washington area here. More than 7,000 acres have been scorched. At least 600 structures are gone, but officials expect that number will actually be much higher as they're able to get a better count. Now, we met with one resident, Joe Van Kara. He and his family were able to save their home because his relatives raced to the scene, dug their own fire line, which allowed firefighters time to get in and save the structures. But most of the homes around him are gone. Another massive wildfire burning in the west in southern Utah. It tripled in size over the weekend, burning more than 36,000 acres. Another blaze in Idaho has also forced evacuations. Some good news here in the Spokane area, the winds that were driving those fires, they have abated. It is much calmer conditions for firefighters. The temperatures have come down at least for a couple of days. They're hoping to make some progress on these three fires here, Vlad.
All right, I'm going to grab it from you, Chris. Thank you so much. And that is good news on that wind. All right, the FBI and EPA want to know why cyber attackers have recently hit public water systems in at least seven states. Now, investigators believe Iran could have done it, but there is no proof. Officials in Michigan and Minnesota say their water systems are operating safely after attacks. CBS News cybersecurity expert and analyst Chris Krebs joins us now. Good morning, Chris. Always good to have you. Let's start broad here. I think a lot of people hear cyber attacks on a water system. It feels very concerning. Specifically, what did the hackers do and how?
So about a week ago, it looks like external attackers, kind of looks like Iran, but we'll come back to that. They were able to log into controllers that sit inside water facilities. And these are the equipment that control the pumps that turn on water, turn off water. And these unfortunately seem to have been connected to the internet. It is not a good practice to connect these controllers, these PLCs, to the internet. And it's also apparent that these external attackers were able to use default passwords, the password that comes in the manual for the device to log into the device and lock them up. So it's not a terribly sophisticated attack. It is an attack that we've seen the Iranians in particular launch several times, including here in Pennsylvania in 2023, as well as throughout Israel during COVID 2020.
You know, Chris, Kelly mentioned it. You hear cyber attack on our water and everyone's like, whoa. So people at home are probably sitting there wondering this morning, number one, in the real world, how does this affect me and how worried should we be about our water supply?
Well, it is absolutely one of those headlines that grabs your attention. However, it does not appear to be a safety event in any of the affected systems. Fortunately, the operators were able to detect, because the systems were locked up, they were turned off effectively. They were able to detect and make the quick changes. In some cases, yes, there were boil water advisories, but those were precautionary, I believe. There was no contamination. There was no chemical adjustments or anything of that nature. nature. They got on it quickly. They were able to reset and get them back up and running. But it is just one more reminder that so many aspects of our daily lives are connected to the internet, and there are bad people out there that want to do bad things to us here in the States.
Speaking of those bad people, Chris, your former agency, CISA, actually indicated that there were already foreign adversaries that were pre-positioning themselves within these critical infrastructures. But my question, actually, beyond the human intel, has to do with artificial intelligence. As that becomes more prevalent, are we at all prepared to deal with the kind of risks that are inherent?
Well, I think that's a great point, Vlad. Look, this attack is a very basic attack we're seeing on the water systems. So there's a broad spectrum of very, very basic credential logins, all the way to these much more sophisticated, advanced, machine-powered, AI-powered attacks. And so there are a whole host of things that risk managers in cybersecurity are dealing with on a daily basis. But you can't forget the basics. Keep your passwords updated, use multi-factor authentication. Everyone should be doing that on their critical accounts, from banking to their emails. But then you also have to think about the AI part. And there's a lot going on in the policy space here in Washington, D.C. And I think there's a lot of room left to run in the conversation.
And really quickly, Chris, I mean, what do federal and state authorities need to do to prevent these kinds of things, not just with water, but other things like electrical systems?
Yeah, well, you got to take a hard look at any of those systems that are connected to the internet. Should they be connected? If not, get them offline. And also make sure that you're not running default passwords on anything, particularly, again, if it's connected to the internet, because you know what? There are thousands and thousands of bad guys out there that are scanning the internet every single day looking for these devices that are connected. But we need the federal government in the fight. My agency that I ran, CISA, it's been cut 30 some odd percent from a personnel perspective, lots of budget. We need those that money restored, those personnel restored. We need to get grant funding out to the state so they can be on the lookout for Iranian hackers, for Chinese, Russians, anybody else.
Chris Krebs, thank you so much. So much good information there. All right. We're going to see a little less of Ariana Grande in response to what her team calls endless ongoing public scrutiny. A representative says Grande will take a break from public-facing work this fall after finishing her sold-out Eternal Sunshine tour and before she appears in the upcoming movie Focker-in-Law. I'll be switching up positions for you. From the stage,
Elva Withrop, I know you're out here.
To Hollywood, Ariana Grande is no stranger to the spotlight.
Yes, gorgeous.
But starting next month, that's all changing. A representative for Grande tells Entertainment Tonight the star will be, quote, taking a step back from visibility at the end of her concert tour next month. The decision is in response to, quote, endless ongoing public scrutiny. Her rep also confirming that Grande will no longer be performing in the West End revival of Sunday in the Park with George, which she was set to star in next summer, opposite her Wicked castmate Jonathan Bailey. Much of the criticism Grande has faced centers around her physical appearance. In her latest music video, her character is repeatedly told she isn't good enough and given feedback like, quote, could lose a few pounds. The music video is causing many to express concerns. Model Charlie Howard, who has been open about her own struggles with eating disorders, said Grande needs psychiatric help and hospitalization and called for it to be taken down. The singer previously responded to comments about her weight in 2023.
I think we should be gentler and less comfortable commenting on people's bodies, no matter what. There are ways to compliment someone or to ignore something that you see that you don't like, that I think we should help each other work towards.
I think people just are worried about her. It's not that, I agree that no one should comment on anybody's personal appearance, but people are expressing concern because they care. They really like her.
That's most of the comments I've seen. People just saying, we want you to be okay. We want you to be healthy. We want you to be happy. And I think taking a step back and maybe taking some time for herself is probably the best thing to do.
Yeah, I hope I hope she can sort of move forward from this, because she is so talented, an incredible singer and actress. Yes. We want to see more of her.
We do. We absolutely do. And yeah, and we could all stand to use a little break from social media. So that's good news. All right. It's time for a look at the stories that caught our eye. Chanel Call is doing the honors this morning. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, friends. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Okay. We start off this morning with some sad news for fans of The Sopranos. Actor Vincent Pastore has died. So you remember him, of course, from that HBO classic, but it actually, get this, took him decades to realize his dream. I love this about his story. He actually didn't get on-screen credit until he was in his 40s, but then he played all kinds of great roles, you know, usually a lot of tough guys in movies like Goodfellas and Carlito's Way. Vincent Pastore was 80 years old. All right, now to a very close call caught on camera. Take a look at this. An officer with the El Paso Police Department was conducting a routine traffic stop when this happened.
Well, here's your card.
How did you guys react to that one? Obviously, such a scary moment here. Both the officer and the man that he stopped were injured, but some good news here. They're expected to be okay. Police, though, are saying the person who hit them was a distracted driver. So certainly a friendly PSA, don't text and drive. Now to a blockbuster trade in baseball that's getting some backlash. The Detroit Tigers ace pitcher Tarik Skubal is now headed to the Dodgers. So a lot of people are upset about this because Skubal is just the latest in a long list of superstars that have been poached by the Dodgers. And, you know, it is just another example of a big market team dominating the sport. Some say it's a sign of inequality in the game and that it adds fuel to the fire, that there could very well be a baseball lockout next season. Kelly, I know you've been tracking this story.
I'm just saying, don't come for the Dodgers for doing exactly what a well-funded team
I mean,
should
you got
do.
The money, spend it, right?
Exactly. This is more of an indictment of how the MLB system works. To your point, that's why there could be a lockout, because this is more coming at the folks that decide not to keep a player because they don't want to spend the money. Don't hate the player, hate the game.
Okay, there you go. Mic drop.
What she said. Period.
All right, speaking of baseball, friends, there was a little respect shown in the middle of a pretty heated argument here. So this is what happened. A hitter for the Texas Rangers was called out on a controversial strike. It was a really close call that didn't go Texas's way. So the Rangers manager came out to argue, but get this, take a look at what happens in the middle of that argument during this seventh inning stretch.
God bless America.
All right, so as soon as the song was over, the manager there, Skip Schumacher, and the they get right back into fighting all over again. He was eventually ejected. But guys, when I watched this, I was thinking of, like, you know when you fight with your partner in public and then someone walks in or someone overhears you and you're like, oh my God, we weren't doing anything. Everything's
fine. Yeah, we're just fine here. But why didn't they start singing God Bless America in the middle of a
the
game?
Show must go on!
Seventh inning stretch.
Oh.
Come on, we gotta get you to a baseball game.
Oh, Vlad.
Yeesh.
Oh, Vlad.
Yeah, tough room. Bring back the discussion around the Odyssey. Let's talk about classics.
You know your strengths, my friend. Yeah,
exactly.
You know.
He stays in his lane, doesn't he?
Sports are not it.
Chanel, thank you so much.
Thanks,
really appreciate it. All right, investigators are following new clues in the disappearance of Nancy Guthrie 6 months after she went missing. The Pima County, Arizona sheriff has also released two ransom notes, including one that claimed the mother of Today Show host Savannah Guthrie died, quote, shortly after she was taken. Jonathan Vigliotti has followed this case from the very beginning, and he joins us now with the latest. Jonathan, good morning.
And Kelly, good morning to you. Pima County Sheriff Chris Nanos said he released those ransom notes hoping someone would recognize the author's potentially distinctive wording and help identify who sent them. When we spoke with the sheriff last week, he insisted that the search for Nancy Guthrie has not gone cold.
Is Nancy Guthrie alive, or based on everything that you have right now,
I have
deceased?
Nothing to indicate she's dead. I don't have a body. I don't have a burial site. I don't have any note.
That was Pima County Sheriff Chris Nanos on Thursday, but he did have a note, two of them. And on Friday, Nanos released them to the public for the first time, both originally sent to the local CBS station. The first, submitted a day after Guthrie was reported missing, says she'll be held for a maximum of 7 days, demands a $4 million ransom be paid in Bitcoin, and promises to return the 84-year-old to a safe drop-off location in Tucson within 12 hours of the ransom's deposit. The second note, sent just 4 days days later says in part, "We never intended to hurt her. She perished shortly after she was taken. She is buried in nature now."
They released them in order to drive more tips from the public, which is a great thing to do. However, so late in the case, and after a period of time where they have had no communication with the public, it just seems that the media strategy here is a little haphazard.
Lance Lysing is a retired FBI supervisory special agent and said the months delayed release could be a question of authenticity.
I'm sure, and maybe even to this day, they're not 100% sure if these notes are legitimate. I mean, they've already arrested and charged people for sending hoax and fake notes in.
When we asked Sheriff Nanos about the messages, this was his response.
Those hostage notes, are they valid? Do we believe they're valid? We think every one of them's valid until we show otherwise.
In an Instagram post Saturday marking 6 months since her mother's disappearance, Savannah Guthrie urged someone to come forward, including anyone who might recognize the writing in the ransom notes, adding, "There is a way to end this situation and do the right thing."
I think you said, is this case cold? Not even close. We're not even close.
And Sheriff Nanos told us he has no doubt the case will be solved. As the search for Nancy Guthrie continues, the FBI is offering a reward of up to $100,000 for information leading to her location or the arrest of anyone involved in her disappearance, Nichelle.
Yeah, Jonathan, thank you. We were all just sitting here saying it's hard to wrap your brain around the fact it's been 6 months. This family needs some relief.
And every time I see Savannah make a plea,
yeah,
whether it's on her social media or elsewhere, my heart just breaks once again for her and her entire family.
Just
wish they could have
some
closure.
Healing.
Yes, some closure.
Well, let them have some healing.
Yeah.
There. All right, coming up, it's hard to believe how many of us stay awake at night because of stress on the job. We're going to have some ideas to help you get better rest.
In this morning's Health Watch, a new study reveals a possible sleep crisis among middle-aged workers. I don't know, I'm going to say hold the possible. Researchers tracked the sleep of working men and women in the UK between the ages of 50 and 66. They found that nearly 70% experienced persistent and clinically significant sleep problems, and many could be linked closely to work-related stress. Shelby Harris is a board-certified sleep psychologist and the author of the book, The Women's Guide to Overcoming Insomnia. She joins us now. Thank you so much.
Morning.
Thank
here.
You. Good morning.
Okay, so this study tracked people for an entire year using wearable devices. They found a strong link between workplace stress and sleep quality. I say that out loud and I kind of go, yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Duh. Something I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. But how does stress interfere with our sleep quality? I mean, is it just that we're up all night thinking about that project or is there something deeper?
Well, it could be that. And also, you think about it, if you're having poor, you're not loving your work and then you have poor sleep quality at night, that's going to make you not want to work out as much the next day, not move as much. You might be just having, you just might not be able to tolerate things as much, but then it makes you have more stress at work. And stress, you don't just leave work behind and then go home and go to bed. We take a lot of things with us. Yeah.
So I wear one of these trackers. I'm wearing an Aura and I'm looking at my contributors from last night. It says total sleep, 4 hours, 39 minutes. But then it says my restfulness is optimal. A lot of people say that they are getting enough hours of sleep, but they're still waking up exhausted. That's why when I see optimal, I'm like, do I feel optimal, ladies? I don't know.
Oh, you've been optimal all day.
Okay, Boo, thank you very much. I try.
The thing that we often talk, you'll hear 8 hours you should be getting. It's really a range for like 7 to 9 hours. But the thing that people don't talk about is quality. So it's really, we like to have good quality sleep before quantity. And they found in this study that it wasn't quantity that was the issue. A lot of the people were getting enough sleep. They were having very broken sleep at night. So a lot of people, if you're having broken sleep, that's something that you really should be trying to work on or at least talk with your doctor about.
To that point, the perimenopausal lady has entered the chat.
Yes. Here.
And you know, you think when you're over 50 and you're kind of, you know, getting, having, going through the change of life or whatnot, that that is what interrupts your sleep, that it's about that. So how do you differentiate between, okay, I'm just getting older and there's some disorder happening here?
Right. Well, we usually like to think about if you've tried to fix all the basic sleep hygiene things. That's not working enough then. And you're starting to have trouble with the quality of your sleep a few nights a week, three or more nights a week.
Oh, I'm having a party at 3 a.m. every night.
Then definitely talk with your doctor, because when we're talking about perimenopause, there can be hormone therapy. There's cognitive behavior therapy for insomnia. We have lots of treatments. Sleep apnea is really common in this age range as well. So we have lots of treatments. But if you've done all the basic sleep hygiene, it's still going on for a few weeks, definitely talk with your doctor.
Let's get specific, though, about some of these things that we can do to help with job stress. I mean, I'm over here popping melatonin, but I also keep my phone next to me, you know, waiting for that moment for the call. So what are some specific things that we can do?
So the first thing that we always really want people to do is just think about consistency of your sleep break timing, which I know when there's shift work, you're working early hours, all over the place, it's very hard. But consistency is really important. Then you think about the things like caffeine, limiting that, limiting alcohol, making sure you take little breaks during the day. So many of us are just eating in front of our computers while we're working. 5-minute break and practicing a little bit of mindfulness during the day. It doesn't have to be a massive meditation. There are great apps. There's lots out there, but taking little mental breaks can really help to de-stress the body so that when you get home, you're in better shape overall. But like I said, if that's not working after a few weeks' time, definitely talk with your doctor.
So a little cocktail at the end of the night doesn't help you wind
Three hours before bed, try to limit it. And then, like, perfection's not the goal. You want to be happy with how you're sleeping most nights of the week.
Sure. Shelby Harris, thank you so much.
We
appreciate
you. It's my pleasure.
The next Met Gala is already making headlines for its focus on one of fashion's most influential and controversial figures. The event will honor John Galliano, who is known for his theatrical and dramatic designs, but his legacy is also marked by anti-Semitic and racist comments that led to his dismissal from Christian Dior in 2011 and a hate crime conviction in France. Galliano has since publicly apologized. The exhibit is set to explore his creative accomplishments and controversies. Joining us now is CBS News fashion contributor Lauren Sherman, who is also a fashion correspondent at PUC. Good morning, Lauren. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
I want to get into it because Galliano is widely considered as one of the most influential designers of our time, right? So what makes his work so groundbreaking, and how has he helped shape what we know as the fashion industry?
So he was the designer of Christian Dior for almost 20 years, and he sort of was integral to the change and the transformation of the fashion industry. And he was also one of the final designers to sort of do innovative fashion. The 90s was sort of the last time we saw anything new, and Galliano and Alexander McQueen, who's been the subject of a Met exhibit previously, were the two final sort of big designers to change the way how we dress.
So, Lauren, as you know, it does seem for many that the fashion industry seems to have had a, or at least has moved beyond any level of discomfort with Galliano. But he had a very public downfall. I just want to remind our viewers, he made a series of anti-Semitic and racist comments. He lost his job at Christian Dior, was convicted of a hate crime in France, as Kelly pointed out. He's apologized. He's undergoing some kind of rehabilitation. But it often feels as if the fashion industry excuses these types of remarks. Let's remember Coco Chanel collaborated with Nazis, and she's still celebrated today.
So about 10 years ago, Anna Wintour, the global editorial director of Vogue and the person who sort of runs the Met Gala, she really worked hard to give Galliano a second chance in the fashion industry. She got him a job at Maison Margiela, where he worked for about a decade. And he has been meeting with Jewish leaders for the last 10 years. There was a big documentary in 2004 that sort of outlined what he has done to ask for forgiveness and to rehabilitate himself. He obviously had substance abuse problems, and that had to do with the anti-Semitic outburst in Paris in 2011. So it's, yeah, of course, the fashion industry is they keep their own, and he is one of their own. And there was forgiveness a long time ago in fashion. Globally, we'll see. I mean, do people know who John Galliano is? They know who Christian Dior is. Do they know who John Galliano is? Is this going to really make a big deal? But also, are people going to show up? Because he doesn't have a famous name like Yves Saint Laurent, one of the only other designers to ever have a dedicated show at the Met.
You know, Lauren, the Met says the exhibit is going to present Galliano's creative achievements and address this controversial past that he has. How difficult will it, though, for a museum to properly address that, especially, you know, especially when the Met Gala has a lot of criticism in the past that it is simply out of touch with all these celebrities gathering. And now you have something like this on top of it.
Look, Andrew Bolton, the curator of the Costume Institute, fashion reflects the culture. They have to address this. They have to. John Galliano's tribulations and everything that he has gone through has to be a part of this exhibit because that is a part of his body of work in some ways. So I'm not worried about the exhibit. In terms of the gala itself, look, I can imagine a world where that night no one really talks about any of this stuff. Maybe there will be, it'll be addressed in some ways by Jewish leaders who maybe end up attending the gala. We'll see. I don't know. I think what we're going to see is a lot of vintage Dior and a lot of vintage Galliano. And maybe for the party itself, this isn't a big part of it.
All right. We'll see what happens. Lauren Sherman, always great to have you, friend. Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right. Up next, award-winning actor and writer Paul W. Downs is here. His show Hacks just made Emmy history. We'll talk with him about that and a whole lot more.
Hey, Paul.
First, hey, Paul. We are jumping. Welcome back to CBS Mornings. It is time for the stories that are the talk of the table this morning. Nichelle, you are our guest. You are in pole position.
We have got the whole studio
talking about this morning, right? Everybody talking.
So my talk of the table is a tragic trend for some women. The rise of the stay-at-home boyfriend.
What?
That's what I said.
No.
Yes.
Not real.
More and more, due to changing economic factors, Gen Z women are financially supporting the men in their life. Federal Reserve data show over the last 12 months, the number of jobs held by men fell by 142,000. Women gained 298,000 jobs. Indeed's Hiring Lab found 1.2 million jobs were added between February 2024 and February 2026, and two-thirds of those jobs went to women. So, if you listen to Destiny's Child, ladies, leave your man at home. Probably because he can't afford a night out.
Because there's also the old school, ain't nothing going on but the rent. Got to have the J-O-B if you want to be with me.
It's a no for me, y'all. It's so hard out here.
Is it hard? You are a beautiful, successful woman.
Single woman. Because you know what I have found? And don't send me, don't at me, don't send me the emails. Nine times out of 10, a man is intimidated by a woman that works, that has more money than them. Mm-hmm. And so, but then there's this new generation of men that are looking for a sugar mama.
No.
They're looking for a lady to take care of them. And they want to be kind of like, look, the men in here are all
They're all like,
human.
No, because Kelly and I have been talking about this for a project that we're working on. And I was saying to her that, like, look, my wife has 7 Emmys. She has 2 Peabodys.
You're on an island. You're a rare breed.
Give it to him.
Why? Why am I rare?
Because when I would go out and I would say where I went to school or where I worked, all of a sudden it would be like, oh, do you think you're better than me? I'm like, what? People cannot handle that. They want to say all the nice things. Oh, yeah, I want a woman who can who can take care of me. Absolutely not. I also think we've taught this next generation of young men that it's like you have to tiptoe around things. And they're like, oh, screw it. You want to take care of me?
And you know what it said when I read this article as well, is that the jobs that are gaining right now in this in life are jobs that are female-centered. So it's healthcare, like health sciences, those type of things. And the jobs that are falling are kind of men-centered, AI, tech. All of the
finance,
all this, that AI is kind of doing more in those fields. So that is why there's really this change in the workforce, but also that more young men are moving back home with their parents and living.
Which is also bizarre to me.
Right.
Because I argued to Kelly that, you know, the fact that men, it doesn't mean financial providing for women doesn't always have to be financial, but helping out at home, helping with childcare. Those
Where
are the
do
things.
That at?
Well, what?
That's the thing. If you are going to be staying at home, then you have to add value in some
Right, because
other
the article
way.
That I referenced was this New York Magazine article that said not only are we talking about this, but Gen Z women are paying for their boyfriends and they're not even helping out at home. They're not helping.
Mothering them.
I'm old school. I was raised that a man is supposed to be the head of the household. cool. Y'all take care of
That's
it.
Right.
Not that I'm supposed to be a passenger princess, but a man is supposed to protect and provide. And if it's changing, I'm just going to be out here.
Yes, because
girl streets for the rest of my life.
No, because I agree with you, Michelle. Providing used to, it doesn't always have to mean a bigger paycheck. It can mean some of those things we're talking about. Moral support,
right.
Helping out in the house. We've been doing it since Australopithecus afarensis, which is the first bipedal hominid that, anyway, we've been doing it for 2 million years.
No baseball.
I don't want to pay
rare
for
breed.
That's what I said. I don't want to pay for Chili's. I don't want to pay for the three for me.
Oh my
I don't want to do it.
That's a good conversation. We keep talking about it. Let me talk about something else that is really interesting. It's about stooping. Do you guys know stooping?
I don't.
It's a New York City beloved tradition, stooping. So let me break it down. Last month, Jocelyn Ullman was caught on surveillance video taking 5 vintage rugs left outside of a shop in the middle of the night. The rugs were worth more than $4,000. Ullman says she thought the rugs were thrown out, but the store owner says they had been left out to dry. She called the police. Ullman actually turned herself in. She was arrested. She was booked and released without any charges. Of course, many online commenters are saying that the rugs appear to be up for grabs. Why? Because in New York City, people often, we do it all the time, we put things out on our stoop, and you can watch from your window as people come and they look and they carry it off. It's usually things that are being discarded. You leave out on your stoop. It's a beloved tradition. I've seen it more in Brooklyn since I've moved to Brooklyn than I saw it in Manhattan, but in Brooklyn, it is everywhere.
Well, and so this was an honest stealing.
Okay.
Really? I mean, I kind of think in New York City, you leave something out or you turn your eye, you just assume.
But wouldn't you put a sign that says, like, free, take me, I'm yours.
No, because people know that
it's like
stupid.
A tradition.
It's a tradition.
Huh.
So the owner of the store says she did not want the police. She wishes she hadn't gotten the police involved. So
did she return the rug?
Yeah, she did. Yeah. She returned the rug. Yeah. So everything's all well that ends well. The hilarious series Hacks is having a moment. It made Emmy history with a record-breaking 24 nominations. That is the most ever for a comedy series in a single year. Paul W. Downs is co-creator, executive producer, writer, and of course, stars in the show hilariously. In this clip, he returns from a work trip with his assistant turned business partner, Kayla, who we love. Check it out.
So I guess we got bed bugs for nothing.
Oh, I think that's it.
Oh,
yes!
Thank God.
My car!
Hey, wait. We paid for parking, wait.
Daddy? What the hell?
My God, have you no dignity? Cover up.
I am covered. It's a full blouse.
I'm talking to Jimmy. You look like two Hannah Montanas.
Hannah Montana was two people, you moron. We got bed bugs and we had to go to Sassafras.
What about the chokers?
They complete the look.
Apparently they complete the look.
I love it so much. Paul W. Downs is here. Welcome.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh. Congratulations.
I should have worn that.
You should have.
That was my bad.
You missed an opportunity, Paul.
I really did. So let's talk about these nominations. How does that feel? Just right off the bat.
I mean, it's crazy. We did not expect it. But
the most nominations.
It's ever. Insane.
In history, yes.
But you know what? There's so many people that make the show with us that it's often, for a lot of them, it's their first nomination, and this is the last time. So they just squeaked in, but we're so happy that they got recognized. And you know, for me, as an actor, it means, you know, I was recognized for my face and body, which is the most important.
That is most, very, very important. Forget the creative aspect,
well,
it's how you look.
The writing, the producing, great, but you know. The instrument, it's good to be nominated for that.
So you mentioned that this is the first nomination for many of the folks. Meg Stalter, of course,
yes.
Plays the iconic Kayla. Yep. I could watch a whole show, by the way,
really
of
could.
Jimmy and Kayla.
Oh, we should better watch
just,
a whole
just
show.
Just some fans wanted something.
I mean, you got to write in. You got to write in. Write to the show. One HBO Drive. Thank you,
were
yes.
You were able to break the nomination, though, to her. What was that like?
Yeah, I called Meg, and she didn't even know it was happening that day. And I was like, so, Emmy nomination. She's like, Hacks got nominated. And I was like, you got nominated.
Aww.
It took a minute to convince her. She was so, but you know, that happens a lot with us that I tell her things. You know, I'm like, you just ran a red, you know, so there's a lot. It's very Jimmy Kayla. It's like par for the course for us.
I think that I have asked you 75 million times leading up to this final season. Is it the final season? You know you're going to give us more.
I
love it so much. But here's what I believe. You know, my brain goes in weird places, Paul. Mm-hmm. During the final episode and afterwards, you did a little, like, talk back. And you said, we set up this episode to show you what life what Ava's life would look like after this.
Yes.
We set up this episode to show you what Jimmy and Kayla's life would look like after this. So my brain says we're getting a spinoff from somebody.
Which we would love.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I would love it too, but because we planned the ending for so long,
yeah,
it's really hard for us to want to do anything after that. You know, we really like, we kind of want to leave the show as it is, because it's in that way you can like, the characters can live on in your mind.
But don't we have to see how Jimmy and Kayla run this agency?
We want to see them run this. I mean, you guys are like Martin and Lewis.
Yes.
Basically.
Thank
right?
you.
Yes.
Thank
no,
you.
That really is. When I watch you guys, I think like Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis, you know, for the younger people, go out and Google them and watch clips. But that's
so
what
nice.
I think of
Thank you.
You.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it. I would love to do a spinoff with Kayla. I think it would be good to have a spinoff that's about the sexual escapades of Jimmy Lusak Jr. You know, like, let's see After Dark. What's their personal life like? Yeah, I mean, we've seen a little bit of their work life, but what happens behind the scenes, you know? What happens
Absolutely.
After Dark?
Yeah.
So I would love to do it, but at least for now, there's no plan to do it. Hmm. So, you know,
so
I just want to prepare the audience. That.
But so then why did you, in preparing for Hacks, decide that, and you already knew that it was going to only be 5 seasons. I'm always curious about when a creative person decides an arc of a show
yeah.
as opposed
yeah.
to trying to say, we're going to keep going as long as we can.
Well, we knew the ending, right? And we knew like some of the big tentpoles. She was going to try and get a late night show. She was going to get it and ultimately give it up. And we knew the very last episode, including the last song. We had that planned.
Wow.
We cleared that like 3 seasons ago. So we knew how we wanted to end it. That said, I was like, well, could we do that ending in 15 seasons? I was like, I wanted to spread it out. I was like, let's do it in 15 seasons, which is why it's so hard to say it is the end.
Mm-hmm.
But Jean Smart thought it was right to do 5. I said, I challenge you. And she said, okay, let's wrestle. So we wrestled. And she won. So it didn't happen. But I that was the thing. The runway was always up for debate, how long it was going to be. Like, could we make it 6 and put that ending at the... We always knew where we were going, but getting there was the thing that evolved.
One of the yummy Easter eggs that I think I saw was you said you wrote the pilot in 2019 at an Airbnb in Paris.
Yes. Yes.
And then when you were shooting that final shot, you looked up and realized you were on the same street.
Is that crazy?
That you lived?
Wow. I'm sorry, I get goosebumps. It's crazy. Yeah, we had a random Airbnb there. We wrote the pilot. And then I looked up on that final shot and I was like, that's so weird. I think we're on the same street. And I looked at our pictures from the time and it was exactly the same street blocks away. It was so full circle.
Destiny.
So weird. Because, you know, it's like, it's a big city.
The universe will give
the fact
you
that
what it
gives
you. It,
that's right. That's right.
And you've given us just 5 seasons of an incredible show. Thank
best.
You so much for
yes.
being here.
Thank you for having me.
Having
I appreciate
all
it.
All 5 seasons of Hacks are streaming right now on HBO Max.
It's Monday, and that means it's time for Beg Knows America, where CBS News contributor David Begno finds the heart in every story. Now, today, David answers the question, why did the rooster cross the road? In the case of a small town in Maine, the answer was to get to a little girl named Piper.
This summer, the small beach town of Ogunquit, Maine, has been overrun by a flock of giant roosters. And the people here love it. It all started because of a 6-year-old girl named Piper.
What's this one's name?
Dave and Sarah LeBlanc adopted Piper 3 years ago after fostering her since she was a baby. Piper is autistic, and like many kids on the spectrum, she's developed a deep attachment to one particular animal. So when Piper spotted a 6-foot-tall tin rooster at a tractor supply store last year, Dave knew it was coming home.
She said, "Roosty." I'm like, oh man, I hope this isn't expensive.
One rooster turned into 2. Then a whole flock, and a new holiday tradition for the family. But the town wasn't as charmed. You see, the LeBlanc's home shares a lawn with the family business, the Omelet Factory.
I'll take those out of the way.
And Ogunquit doesn't let businesses put oversized ads on their front lawns. Officials said the roosters were acting as signs, so the fines started coming.
It was April 3rd that we got our first notice of violation.
So the LeBlancs started sidelining the birds.
Nice side-eye, Roosty.
That's when a friend offered to foster one. Dave dropped one off. Word got out. Soon, so did the roosters.
Why are we sharing them?
Because it makes them happy.
Because it makes them happy, or it makes...
The grown-ups happy.
It makes the grown-ups happy.
Yeah, and kids.
And kids.
It's not about the town. It's not about any of us. It's about Piper.
They landed in front yards and local farms across the town.
I reached out and told them that we would love to foster a rooster at the Hilton Wind Farm.
From restaurants to churches to surf shops, the locals made it clear where they stood.
This is our way of saying you are not alone.
We have been supporting you from the beginning.
Thank you.
What you're doing is wonderful.
It's the kind of story that could teach any kid a simple lesson. Rules are rules. Follow them.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go find a little rooster.
But the people of Ogunquit are teaching a harder one. That the people who write those rules are the same ones who can rewrite them.
We're not trying to go against the town or anything like that. We're just trying to say, this is a different situation. This is a therapeutic rooster. This is not a sign.
The movement spread on social media.
Ezra and Sadie, who's this?
Cluck Norris.
Yeah, this is Cluck Norris.
And soon, people in other states were putting up their own roosters, too.
And our rooster Nugget.
The LeBlancs even made a map.
We're seeing people come together in support of a child getting the help that she needs to grow up.
Right now, the couple is still at odds with the town. So we gave the town a call. They had no comment about the feathers they ruffled.
We have so many families of autism reaching out to us saying, you can't stop. We've never seen this kind of attention that could benefit them. As tired as we are, we said, you know what? They're right, we can't stop.
A flock of roosters has a whole town talking about which rules are worth keeping, which ones just might need a bit of a wake-up call.
It's something we're supposed to do, right? It's what our shirts all say, be better humans in the restaurant, because it's who we are, and we're teaching Piper how to do that.
It's just all...
It's meant to be. It's just...
Meant to be.
Be better humans, well said. And
yes.
Check out the newest edition of David's podcast, The Person Who Believed in Me. Oscar-winning producer Brian Grazer talks about having trouble in school and the debt he owes to his grandmother. It's available right now wherever you end your find your podcast.
Love it. That does it for us.
Yes.
It was so great having you. You're here all week with us.
Whew.
Yes, you crushed it.
Day
Michelle.
One is done.
We'll see you all tomorrow on CBS Mornings. Cock-a-doodle-doo.
Cluck Norris.
A new Paramount Plus docuseries.
We're about to go kill Osama bin Laden. It did look like a one-way ticket.
Experience life on the front lines of infamous U.S. Special Op Forces missions.
We are expecting 80% casualties.
Told from the soldiers who risked everything.
There's just way too many of them and way too few of us.
And featuring exclusive unseen footage.
We got Michael on the contract!
Special Ops True, now streaming on Paramount Plus.